The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.
Welcome, listeners, to Bruin Radio Interviews, an hour-long interview show brought to you by the students and staff of the Brookings Harbor High School in partnership with Curry Coast Community Radio, KCIW. Content for this program is provided by the Brookings Harbor High School.
This is Bruin Radio with Iris and
Izzy and Ashley.
And we're here with Curry County Commissioner Candidate Jan Barbas. Hello, how's it going?
Good, how are you, Ashley, Izzy, and Iris?
Good. Pretty good.
We're good. Well, we always like to start and ask about your Checo Bar fire story.
Well, you know, it just kind of came on us by surprise. It blew up really quickly. And I've been running this news group on Facebook called Curry News and Views. And we started trying to get information out. We saw a lot of confusion, a lot of misinformation, a lot of fear, and we just started working to get out the fire maps, the satellite data, to respond to people's questions. And what we have here in Curry County, you know, we don't have a dedicated local TV station. We don't have any radio that has a full-time news reporting. The pilot reports issues an edition twice a week, but Facebook's able to respond now, and this moves so quickly that it started to become where people were coming to. Our membership in Curry News and Views grew from about 2,000 to about 3,500 through the course of the fire, and that was because of citizen reporting. A lot of people picked up and started providing information because we were able to research and get accurate information out. We developed sources and learned to interpret the satellite data and get that out. So a lot of what I did was get up in the morning and start getting that data out. And in the midst of it, I got evacuated. So, you know, bugging out, figuring out where to go, what to take. And then people started contacting me behind the scenes. So suddenly I'm getting PMs, I'm getting phone calls, I'm getting text messages. And because of Curry News and Views, because so many people were contributing, I knew kind of who in the community was doing what. And I was able to put people together to, you know, meet the people they needed to find. And then sometimes I just went out and helped somebody when it appeared that, you know, somebody didn't have anyone else to turn to. I just said, well, can I come over? And I helped somebody change their air filter, literally, because they were choking on the smoke and didn't know how to put a high efficiency filter in their system. And so that was kind of during the fire. And then after the fire, I was invited by the Wild Rivers Community Foundation to participate on their panel that administered the relief funds. And so we're actually just finished that up and waiting on the final report pretty soon. But that was a very fulfilling activity. And
so who was we?
Well, Curry News and Views has been around. I started it, I think, in October 2015 or maybe October 2014. I remember it was October. And in that time, I've encouraged citizen reporting. And it has become a hub for citizen reporting. And there were quite a few citizen reporters that participated and helped. Melissa Williams comes to mind immediately for pulling up satellite data and learning how to interpret it. But just everybody, I mean, people would comment and say, what are we going to do with the horses? How do we get them out? Where are we going to take them? And then behind the scenes, we're dealing with, say, Summer Madison, who's working with the county fair, and put that all together. And we got the information back out to the people. You can take them there. I think the Talawa may have taken some. It was that kind of thing. And so we is this community.
Tell us about the moment you decided to run for Curry County Commissioner.
Yeah, so it's been building a long time. It kind of started in 2015 when the sheriff asked me to participate on his citizen advisory council. And then I started going to county commission meetings at that time, probably actually in late 2014, I think it was. And I've been going ever since, and I've just been seeing the need, and it's just where I feel I need to be in this county. It's where I feel like I can do the greatest good, and where I just feel like I belong. I can't point to any moment, though.
Can you tell us more about the Citizen Advisory Council?
Yeah, so the sheriff was concerned about funding. He's still concerned about funding. And he brought together, I think we had all three mayors and five or six community members. He impaneled this group, and we met. And he wanted to form a law enforcement service district. And so we investigated that for him and put together with his staff and with county staff. And we held, I think, 7 or 8 or 9 public meetings, which we got a lot of input. Some of them had 30 or 40 people in attendance. We were headline news quite a few times in the pilot and the reporter. We put together, it turned out we could not go directly to a district because of a bunch of complexities. We put together a ballot proposal for a temporary operating levy that was designed to mimic the district and basically function as a trial period. And then we were going to bring forward an actual district proposal a year and a half or so, 2 years into that 3-year period. But it didn't do well with the voters. I think it was 57% against for the temporary operating levy. And so we felt there was not support to go towards the district, and we dropped it.
Are you happy about dropping it? Would you have liked to see it go through?
Well, it's an interesting question because the sheriff was very concerned at that time that we were really up against a wall with funding, and none of those consequences have actually come to pass. We're still about the same as we were at the time. I support 24/7 coverage, which we do not have. But I think they're on about 16 hours a day right now. He tries to keep two officers on at all times. We're talking about the road patrol. It's called road patrol, but they're the people who respond when you call for help. Not here in the city. In Brookings, you have your own PD. But if you're in the county, or out on the beaches or something, the sheriff is the primary responder. When you have an auto accident, if there's a domestic violence incident or whatever occurs, that's the road patrol. And that's what they do. It's not traffic enforcement that people kind of wonder. It would be if they had enough people, but they're nowhere close to that. So I would like to see him get more resources. I think there should be two officers on at all time at a minimum. The proposal that we offered in 2015 was three officers on at all times, one north, one central, and one south in the county, because it is a very long county. And that would allow them to have backup. So I would like to see us move towards some degree of better support, but the voters are not interested in a property tax. And the way the special district law is put together, you can fund it only through a property tax or through service fees. Service fees are more for things like sewer and water districts that, you know, you pay a bill for how much water you use. They don't really apply to a law enforcement district. So essentially, the only way the legislature allows that sort of district to be funded is with a property tax, and I just don't see that there's any way of doing that at this time in Curry County. I'm not in favor of any further property tax proposals, but I would like to find some way for the sheriff to at least have two on 24/7. And what I think we're going to have to do is go to Salem and get some changes.
If you were elected Curry County Commissioner, what are some policies you would like to see through?
Well, as I alluded to previously, I think we need to be in Salem. We need to be representing Curry County, and I'd like to lobby in Salem for more consideration of what rural counties and what Curry County needs. I think we're saddled with too many one-size-fits-all regulations. The land use planning regulations are very burdensome, and there are estimates that fewer than 5% of Curry County is actually readily developable with the land use planning and the land ownership. We have quite a bit of federal land ownership, so that we can't develop, obviously. And then, but of the private land, most of it can't be developed in any readily accessible manner. We need to be talking to Salem about funding. You know, that they have the county's hands tied behind its back as far as funding goes. Every way that a county has to raise funds has strings attached and limitations. And our history is that we had the timber funding and it went away just about the same time as measures, Measure 50 was the last, and I think that was 1998, but Measures 5, 45, and 50 work together and have limited the ability of the county to raise property taxes. And they caught us as the timber funding left, and we had this artificially low property tax, and we've been stuck with it since. And the feds, cut back on the timber. The ONC timber was funding the county, and the feds have cut that back. They don't harvest as much. We still get ONC funds, but we don't get as much. And so we just don't have the money that we have. Our tax rate got locked just as the timber funding disappeared. And we've had close to 20 years now and not been able to figure out how to replace it. And I don't think we're going to replace it with local funds. I think that we're going to have to talk to Salem about whenever they get new funds, if they pass a new statewide source of revenue, counties need to get a piece of that. And so that's one thing I want to lobby for. And that's going to require that we change the travel policy. The travel policy was just adopted in the last few months and has essentially eliminated commissioner travel, all but eliminated it. We need, as commissioners, to be out in the community, here with you students, at various meetings throughout the county, able to respond when there's a Checo bar fire. We need to be hearing from you, talking to you, finding out what's important to you, going to all sorts of community organizations, getting ideas from you guys, because we're not just the only ones that have ideas. And then we need to be able to take those to Salem, and we need to be able to say, Salem, you know, we like what happened. We need an emergency room here in Brookings, and the law won't let us have one. And Gary Milliman and Ron Hedenskog, your former mayor, they did that. They went to Salem and they got that law changed. And it's now at least legal to have an ER here in Brookings. Now, the health district hasn't quite got that done. And there's another whole issue that needs to be worked on. But So one policy I'd like to change is the travel policy. Another is the decorum policy. Historically, the county commission has operated on collegiality, mutual respect. You may not agree with the other commissioner, but you treated him with respect. And that began to break down, and so they passed an ordinance, and now, you know, when the chair hits his gavel on the table, if you don't shut up, you can be fined $2,000. It's a law. I don't think that's right. I don't think that the chair should have that much power, because all three commissioners are elected as equals. And so I'd like to see that changed. But most importantly, I want to see the county refocus on economic development. In the last 2 to 3 years, the Economic Development Department was disbanded. We've outsourced economic development. We've gone from about 1.5 full-time equivalents to something around half of a full-time equivalent with South Coast Development Corporation. So those are some of the policies I'd like to see changed and some of the directions I'd like to see the county commission go.
You mentioned O and C earlier. Could you please elaborate on what that means?
Yeah, O and C is the Oregon and California counties. And there's an incredible history here, but in the late 1800s, Congress, the U.S. Congress, wanted to develop this region. And they granted quite a bit of land to the railroads. And the railroads were supposed to do a couple of things. And one was to open up what is now the I-5 corridor. It wasn't there at the time, of course. And the other was they were given this land and they were supposed to sell it off to people who would develop it. And that was supposed to fund the railroad construction. So you see how this works. They make a profit selling the land and then they build the railroad. Well, it turned out to be... It didn't work well. There were accusations of corruption. It looked like they were selling the land to sham persons who would then sell it back to them. And so there was, Congress got upset. And I think, I want to say 1932, maybe it was 1936, Congress passed the O&C Revestment Act. And Congress literally took the land back from the railroads. And when they did that, they said they established, they still wanted to develop the area. And so they established a different way of doing that. And basically they said, we're going to log. It wasn't strictly logging, but it's just one part of it that said, we're going to log. And a lot of the logging funds are going to go to the counties. And so that was the act. But they didn't start logging. It wasn't until after World War II, I don't know if you know, there was a housing boom after World War II, and that's when they started logging. So in the mid to late 40s, I know there was some logging before, but if you look at the harvest charts, it really starts to pick up after World War II, and it peaks in 1989, and 1989 is when the Northwest Forest Plan was enacted, and that's what we're living under today. And the Northwest Forest Plan said, hey, wait a minute, we're killing the salmon, we're killing the spotted owl, we're losing our old growth. We need to stop and take a look at this. And they cut back harvest on federal lands significantly. We still have good harvest on state and private lands, but the federal land harvest was cut back. And what happened, I talked about earlier, our county was dependent on those revenues that were coming through the O&C Act.
As commissioner, how much or how little are you willing to be paid?
So the county has a compensation committee, and the compensation committee recommends a salary. I'm not sure where that's going because we recently hired an administrator, so the compensation committee hasn't met since the administrator's been hired. And previously, the commissioners not only functioned as political leadership, but they also worked as a management function, as liaisons to the various county departments, and so they're not doing that anymore. And I don't know if the compensation committee is going to adjust the recommended wage or not, but I will take whatever the compensation committee recommends.
There's been a lot of controversy about hiring a county administrator. What do you think about it?
Well, it has been controversial. It came up around 2012, 2013 as part of a charter proposal. And charters are one of two ways counties in Oregon can be organized. So the other way is a general law county. And Curry County is and remains a general law county. Either form of government can have a county administrator, and the charter proposal was defeated. A lot of people feel that in defeating that, they voted to not have a county administrator. But I think it's important. When you elect me or someone like me, I'm not talking to you about my management skills. I'm talking to you about my values, who I am, where I want to take you as far as direction in future in our county, what I think are solutions to our big problems. I don't know how to manage a county department and all the intricacies of employment law and contracting and those sorts of things, the management function, where to purchase, all the purchasing requirements. There's huge laws around all that. An administrator is a professional. He's trained. These people typically have a master's in public administration. They typically are going to have some years' experience in a smaller municipality or jurisdiction managing. And they come in and they take that part. They don't set the policy. That's still the commission's job. But they do the administration, and they are essentially the manager. They manage the personnel. They manage the facilities and plant. And they handle that busy work. And they also provide a level of interference, if you will, or separation between the political leadership and the staff. So a chain of command is established, and commission will direct the administrator, and the administrator will direct the staff. So you don't have political people getting fired for political reasons. And I think that's important. So we've got to the point where the county has hired an interim administrator and are involved in an executive search for a permanent administrator. And I recognize that this has been very controversial and people have strong feelings. What I think is that by the time the new commissioner is seated in 2019, it should be about a year, a little over a year since we've had an administrator, and that would be a good time to take a look at how it's working and do a little review and see if it's a direction we still want to go, or if it's something that we're just spending a lot of money on and not getting anything back out of.
In an October 2016 letter to the pilot, you wrote about Sugal's performance as a port commissioner. Would you say that you were critical of her time as a port commissioner?
You know, it's an interesting thing about Sue, because I have worked with her at Cape Farello Fire. I have a great deal of respect for what she did at Cape Farello Fire, because she came in at a time when it was in disarray and she put it back together. She really stepped up. But I didn't like how she did certain things at the port, and I wanted to see her out of that position. And I wasn't too comfortable with the idea of her going into the county government, but she's been there just over a year, year and 2 months, and I have been super impressed. I was so wrong. She is the commissioner I agree with the most on the county commission, and what I like about her, she's independent. She doesn't go in there and I'm voting with him because he's my buddy. She goes in and looks at each issue. She does her homework. She makes sure she understands the issues, and then she votes her conscience. And sometimes she sides with Commissioner Huxley, and sometimes she sides with Commissioner Boyce, but she votes what she believes. And And I really like the job she's doing. And I was concerned she didn't know enough about how the county works because, unlike me, I've been going to county commission meetings for 3 to 4 years now. I kind of know how things work there. I had never seen her. I saw her one time at a county commission meeting prior to her election, and I was very concerned. And I think it probably was an issue in her first 6 months, but she's dug in and she has learned how things work. She's doing an amazing job as chair, and I'm actually just thrilled about the idea that maybe I could work with her.
In that same letter to the pilot, you wrote that you would be voting for Court Boyce for county commissioner. Did you indeed vote for Court Boyce?
I did.
Are you happy with your vote?
I am. I like Court. I think he's a real gentleman. There is nobody working harder in this county than Court Boyce. He's everywhere. You run into him at pretty much anywhere. You show up at a city council meeting, he might well be there. He popped into the port meeting the other day, a few months ago. He's all over the county, and he's working hard, and I'm happy.
So you mentioned that Sue Gold was your favorite. Do you favor her over Court Boyce at the moment?
Well, I don't think I favor one or the other. I agree with Sue more. I enjoy being around and, you know, working with either of them. I like working with both of them, and they each have their strengths. Court's positions on some things are a little more extreme than mine, and I find Sue to be more thoughtful and tempered in her approach, and I'm more comfortable with that.
So currently, do you believe that you are the best candidate for commissioner that is running?
Yeah, I think we have 4 really good candidates, and that's really a blessing for the county. And but I think I might be the best because I have been going to the meetings for 3 to 4 years. I feel like I have the knowledge. I know how things are done. I know who's who. I know what the issues are. I think I have that temperament to work well with people and to build alliances. And a lot of what I'm concerned about has been the headbutting up there at the county commission. I really want to see that end. And so I do think I'm the best one for that.
So currently, how do you view the state of the county?
I think it's teetering. It's kind of this situation where we take one step forward, one step back. But we have a lot of great resources. We have the most talented people. We have the best forests. We have the ocean. We've got the rivers. And so what we need to do is leverage those. We got to, you know, take our mushrooms and turn them into something. I'm serious. I'm not playful. But, you know, if you look at Telluride, Colorado, they have a mushroom festival that draws like 30,000 people. And they have more restaurants that serve local stuff. So it's not just mushrooms. It's crab, fish, local grass-fed beef, local lamb. How do we develop that economy that that leverages those? And so we got to work with Travel Oregon because they're doing food trails and they're doing beer trails and that sort of thing. And we've got to kick that off. One thing is we need to build good living wage jobs in this county. And so it isn't just tourism and it isn't just leveraging these natural resources, but the county's role in doing that is to make sure that we still have law enforcement, to make sure that we encourage improvement in our health services deliveries, particularly our mental health services deliveries. We have a housing crisis right now. People are leaving because the wages aren't keeping up with the cost of housing, and the county can have a role in dealing with that.
You're
listening to KCIWLP out of Brookings, Oregon, broadcasting on 100.7 FM. You're tuning in to an interview with candidate for Curry County Commissioner Jan Barbas.
Our schools, particularly here in Brookings, I think are challenged, and the county has less of a role with that, but there are things we can do. We have a juvenile department. That juvenile department works closely with the schools. The county could be involved in funding school resource officers and that sort of thing. So we need to support these core infrastructures in our community, health, schools, law enforcement, and make sure that we have those pillars to build on as we move forward. And we've got to restart our economic development function to get those jobs.
Borrowing money from the road fund has been a topic of some controversy. What is your stance on borrowing from the road fund in Curry County?
Well, there are three distinct ways that money can be borrowed in accordance with state law from the road fund. And what we need to understand is that the road fund is present because the feds, when they eliminated or reduced the ONC funding, they gave us replacement funding for a while. That was called SRS funding. And when they gave it to us, they earmarked a lot of it for the roads. And Curry County doesn't have a lot of roads under county maintenance. So 221 miles, I believe. So we never expended those funds, and they've built up. There are presently about enough funds. The road department is eating into them. They're using more funds each year than they're getting in current income, but it's estimated that there's about 7 to 10 years of money in the road fund, and it's about $33 million right now, I believe. And there are three ways it can be used. We can loan it to city or county departments, and it has to be repaid under very stringent guidelines. For purposes of related road use, which has been defined as road patrol and 9/11 towers, we can actually give money from the road fund to the sheriff's office that's not repaid. And then recently, just in the last legislative session, well, we just finished another one, the 2017 legislative session, a bill passed allowing a third use where the county can actually loan it out to other governmental entities in Curry County. So one that's been talked about is Curry Health District. And my stance is that on the first way, where it's just loaned to another county department and they have to repay it, there's no way for them to repay it. So that's ridiculous and shouldn't be considered. The second way, where it goes to support road patrol and 9/11 towers, those are critical services. If we're in a position where we don't have any other way to do that, then I would support some use of the road fund for that purpose. The third way, where we loan it out, I think if we're very careful about it, so let's say there's $33 million there and we expect that to last 7 years or so. So if we were to loan it in a way that we thought would be repaid within 5 years, and if we didn't loan a lot of it, say less than 10%, and if we got greater interest rate on it than we're getting right now with it invested in the state fund, the LGIP, and don't ask me what that acronym means because I won't be able to tell you, but that's the one, that's the name. It's the investment pool, something investment pool, but I don't know what the L or G stands for. Government. G is for government, and I'm not going to get the L, though. Anyway, if for example, Curry Health Network has a current loan at 6 or 7%, and we're getting about 1% in the LGIP, we may be able to split that difference and get a win-win situation. And maybe that would be enough to get the emergency room open in Brookings. And so right now, nobody knows if that's the case. I've spoken with Curry Health District, and they don't have an answer as to whether they could take that loan and repay it in the time frame we're talking about and get the ER open. They don't know that. But if they were able to do that, and if we were able to do due diligence and make sure that we were sure they could repay it and so on, you know, I think it would be a huge thing. I've talked about economic development. We have, we think, about $75 million passing through this county and out to neighboring counties in healthcare dollars that we're not capturing. And if we could get some significant portion of that and keep it in Curry County, that would be probably the largest economic development opportunity that we have. And that's, we're talking real professional jobs there, 20 to 30 maybe, something like that. And that would be a big deal, I think. So I would really like to see that ER get open.
What role do you want the county to have in gun control?
Well, right now, the situation is that the sheriff is an elected official, and he sets the policy on enforcement. His office is responsible for issuing the concealed carry permits and doing the background checks, and he enforces the law. And the law is, in Oregon, that the state sets gun law. The counties are prohibited from establishing gun laws. Legislation. So I don't see any role for the county commission on that.
What kinds of gun control legislation do you prefer?
Well, I don't know that I have a preference. I think I'm probably a moderate on guns. I think every freedom has its costs, and I support freedom. I support the right to own personal handguns. But I don't know if I think that extends to, you know, the Second Amendment says the right to bear arms. Do you think that includes atom bombs? Literally, I'm asking. I don't think anybody does. So somewhere there's a balance, you know, at some point. Again, I'm just pretty grateful that as a county commissioner, that's something I won't have to tangle with. I just think we need to find some way to reduce the harm that is perpetrated with guns. And I don't really know. I'm not sure that I have an answer to that. It's a super complicated issue. And one thing that has happened is we don't have a lot of research. There is research, but there's not a huge amount of kind of unbiased research out there. And so you can read both sides, and I do read both sides. And I don't know how we as average citizens sort out what's what when you read, you know, because you got researchers coming to absolutely opposite points of view. I have a master's degree in science. I'm a chemist. That's my background. I like to read peer-reviewed literature. I like to read unbiased sources. It's hard to find that in that area of gun control. And so I don't know. I don't feel like I have the information to say what's effective. What I would like to see are things that preserve our rights, but effectively limit you know, people getting shot in schools or in domestic violence situations or barroom brawls, you know, that kind of thing. So how do we go about that? And it's a tough one.
So why do you believe that Curry County has the highest suicide rate in Oregon?
Well, first of all, we have an interesting demographic. We have a very high population of veterans. We're old. We have a lot of poverty, and those are all risk factors for suicide. We also have, we are underserved in healthcare services delivery, and I think particularly so in mental health care services. And we have a real problem with our veterans services, and our veterans are having largely to go to Roseburg for any realistic support. So we need to improve all of our social services, and we need to improve our social services for homeless. We've had a lot of homeless suicides, and we have a person in this county that tracks them. I don't know the exact numbers, but she has some rather staggering suicide numbers. I think something like 54 the last time I heard, amongst the homeless community over about a 10-year period. We need to figure it out. We've got to find ways. But what I think we need to do is focus on the healthcare, the mental health care, and the veterans services. And we need to get the outreach to the homeless community and make sure we're delivering those services there where they're needed.
Do you want Curry County to be pro-life or pro-choice?
I want to focus on decisions that the county commission is going to have to deal with. And I don't think that's one. I don't want to be defined by these large national battleground issues. And I just don't think they're relevant to the role of a county commissioner. I don't think that the county commission is going to deal with that question. I really can't see any way that it's going to come up. And, you know, things like that, things like who I voted for in the presidential election, they have very little relevance to what your county commission is going to do. And I would encourage voters and you to focus on, you know, who's the best to lead this county and what are the issues that we're going to have to focus on in the county. And right now that's, you know, we're going to fix the county budget. We don't have enough revenue. We've got to figure out how we're going to continue to deliver the core services to the voters. Government, you know, a lot of people think government is like a business, but government isn't like a business. You know, a business can look around and say, I'm not making a lot of money selling bubblegum. I think I'll sell candy bars or Slurpees or something. County government, all governments, they have mandated services. We have to have elections. There's no choice. We can't say we're not doing elections because we don't make any money doing elections. They're just a cost. So it's a completely different situation. And a business can go out and look for an investor. County government is not allowed to go into debt. You know, there's a lot of differences in how these organizations function. And we need to focus on making this county work.
Tell us about your history with the Wildlifters Coast Foundation for Dance.
Yeah, so that's a great thing. I have a friend, his name's Eric Bryant, and he started dating this woman named Sky Marie McDonald, and I didn't know her. I said, who's that? And he said, well, she's a dancer, and then he says, you know, she teaches ballet, and I said, we have ballet in Brookings? Really? This is cool. I didn't know we had it. And then he says she has a show coming up, and it was Beatlemania. And so I went to the show, and I was just so amazed. All the costume changes, I couldn't even tell you how many, all the different songs, each one to a completely different choreography and lighting and costumes and different kids. And the biggest thing, though, was the smiles on the kids' faces. They were having such a good time. And one of my hobbies is photography, and I had brought my camera. So I took a lot of pictures, and after the show, I reached out to Sky Marie, and I said, you know, I've got these pictures, and, well, it turns out she likes to do photography, too. So we get talking, and she says, I want a nonprofit. I want a nonprofit to start, you know, supporting dance in the community, and I had seen those kids' faces, and I know that things like dance, figure skating, precision sports, are tied to academic performance. You know, they enhance academic performance. And I knew that they're good things to have on your resume if you're going to be college bound. And I knew they keep kids off the street. They give them something positive to do. And I just wanted to get involved. So she asked me to be on her board. And I ended up writing the bylaws and doing all the registration to get us our 501c3 status and all the state registrations and all that. And then it's time for the first meeting, and the board elected me president. So I've been doing that. We're just over 2 years old, I guess. We'll be 2 years in August. And it's been pretty cool. We've put on the Nutcracker twice, and we have put on the Velveteen Rabbit, which was an original composition that Sky Marie did with all original choreography and costuming and an original soundtrack. The book exists. It's old, so it's out of copyright, and we could use it. And it's just a charming, charming little story. And so that was just a lot of fun, and we've been building up equipment. We've got flooring, we've got curtains, we've got stage lighting, so we're just slowly putting together the ability to bring performance to Brookings and to create the opportunity for kids like yourselves to do dance performance, to learn dance, for the community to see dance. We bring in professional dancers, and it's just been a lot of fun.
Do you have a favorite form of dance?
No, I don't. I can't dance, okay? I mean, maybe this goes back to why I like to support this. I have a lot of respect for people who could do things that I am absolutely miserable at. And so, like basketball. I really have a lot of respect for basketball players because you can put me on a court all alone and give me the ball and I can't get it to go in the basket for anything. And I can't dance for anything. I enjoy watching them. I enjoy more that seeing them develop. You know, I've been involved for a little over 2 years, and we've got a group of dancers coming through that you can just see them progress and take on greater and greater roles and move. Some of them become leaders, and that's what I like out of it. I don't really care how they dance or, you know, it's just that they're doing it.
So earlier, you were talking about Sky Marie McDonald, and why do you think that she did not win when she ran for the school board?
Honestly, I don't have the slightest idea. You touch upon a very important point, though. We don't have polling in Curry County. We have very little accurate information as to what our electorate thinks and why they do what they do. I think in that race, there were two excellent candidates. But we don't know why the voters voted the way they did, and we rarely know much about why our voters do what they do. And you hear various opinions, and probably some voters are attracted to each opinion you might hear. So, but if you want to try to synthesize into what is really driving the electorate, you need good scientific polling, and we just are so far from that. We don't know.
Would you like to add in a polling system?
I don't think we have the resources to do it. And they're usually done by people like you, students, usually more often at the college level, but there probably are high school students that get involved. But, you know, Quinnipiac does national polling, their university. Back in Utah, where I used to live for a while, Brigham Young University has both a TV program and a polling program, and they do the polling and put it on their TV station. So it's a really comprehensive and very influential in Utah. But I don't think we have anything that's focusing on rural Oregon counties, and we just don't really know. So it's an information gap, but I don't see much way to resolve it. It's not the role of government to do it, in my opinion. That's the role of the media, and that's the role of or other organizations. Sometimes they're for-profit organizations, and sometimes there's independent nonprofits like Gallup, that will take these things on. A lot of polling is done by politicians out of their budget. They pay private pollsters to do polling, but they're doing it to seek advantage. And so independent polling for the media, for community information is something of a different beast.
Do you plan to remain vice president of the board if you win the county commissioner seat?
Yeah, well, each year in July, the county commission will elect new officers. And so I don't know that I will be elected to be vice president again, but I'm sure I'll stay on the commission. I intend to. And you know, we'll see what my role will be, because that's really up to the other commissioners.
What have you learned as vice president of the Port Commission?
I don't know.
I understand.
I really can't point to any one thing or any, you know, I've only been on there about 8 months. And it's hard. It's hard for me to come up with anything for that.
What changes have you made to the administration of the port since becoming a commissioner?
So we've updated quite a few policies. We've put in place a waiting list policy for the boat slips moorage. We've updated the procurements policy. We've updated fee structures. And we started, probably most significantly, we started a natural hazards mitigation plan. And when that's approved, we're hopeful that that will open up FEMA funding to help fix up the port somewhat.
So what is the full mitigation plan?
The natural hazard mitigation plan is a FEMA document. It'll be our document, but it's written according to FEMA standards, Federal Emergency Management Agency standards. And it allows us to access pre-disaster funds for improving resilience. So, for instance, you've probably heard about the threat of tsunamis, and this is what we're probably the number one hazard. So, what you do to do a natural hazard mitigation plan, the first step is let's identify what we're going to talk about, the port in this case, and then what hazards is it subject to? Are we worried about tornadoes? Are we worried about hurricanes? Are we worried about earthquake? Are we worried about tsunami? Are we worried about forest fire? As we sort of rank those hazards. And then we sort of know how to focus. And then we go look at the port infrastructure and we say, okay, how could it be affected by each of these hazards, and what could we reasonably do to protect it from those hazards? And then we propose a plan to do those protections, and if we're lucky, FEMA funds it. And so that's where we are right now. So it goes through the State Office of Emergency Management, which is the state equivalent of FEMA. And then once they approve it, we do revisions, and then they approve it, and then it goes to FEMA, and then it's at FEMA now. It's just finished its first round of review, and we're doing another set of revisions. So we're hopeful that that will get approved.
You were talking about tsunamis, and what do you think about Curry County's only hospital being in the path of a tsunami inundation zone?
Yeah, I understand why they did it. It's a complex problem. First of all, you know, not all tsunamis are equal. We have distant tsunami, which are fairly frequent. You know, we've had one within your lifetime that did some damage. And then we have the near tsunami, which is what we're really worried about. So it's not in the distant tsunami threat zone. And the near tsunami, the Cascadia subduction zone, those events, they aren't all the same either. So some of them might be, say, like an 8.0 earthquake, and others might be a 9.0 or a 9+. And that's a huge, huge difference. So the 8.0 doesn't generate that big of a tsunami, and it will not impact the hospital. So the first thing you have to realize is not every tsunami is going to hit the hospital. Only the very, very worst case tsunamis are going to get up there. And the second thing you got to ask, you know, like, what's the life expectancy of the hospital? Probably 40, 50 years, something like that. So now you're going to say, what's the odds of a tsunami in that specific time frame? And they're not huge. A tsunami big enough to hit the hospital severely. I'm not a geologist. I can't give you an exact percentage, but I think it's well below 10% odds in the 50 or so year lifetime of the hospital. And then you got to say, what are your alternatives? If I don't build it there, where can I build it? I got to look at landslide risk. I've got to look at getting people to the hospital in the case of an earthquake, where bridges are out, where landslides are out, where roads are impassable, where a tsunami has just hit. I've got to look at, You know, so if I put it way out in the middle of nowhere, no one can get to it, right? I've got to look at finances. I've got to look at all sorts of things. And the basic thing that they decided is that the infrastructure was there, the roads, the sewer, the electrical. That's huge. They own the land. That's huge. That it was in the heart of Gold Beach. Okay, I know we would rather have it in the heart of Brookings down here. But at least there is a community there that can get to it, as opposed to if, let's say, they put it halfway between Gold Beach and Brookings, or moved it up out of Gold Beach into the hills. So, you know, they looked at a lot of things. And the other thing people need to understand, you know, we had a choice to be in that district, and we have chosen not to. They don't need to put it where we in Brookings want it. They need to put it where their constituents want it. And I think they did. And so it's a sore point, but I'm very hopeful we get the ER. I think that's the big thing. I'm a little disappointed because I think in the design phase they talked about putting a lot of the critical infrastructure on the roof and building it to a 9-plus earthquake standard. I think they did build it to the 9-plus earthquake standard. The building is supposed to come through the earthquake just fine, according to the engineers. But the generators on the ground, outside on the ground, and the it's a paperless hospital, and the IT center is on the ground floor. So I'm a little concerned that they didn't follow through putting the infrastructure on the roof.
What do you know about the other candidates for county commissioner?
I don't want to try to define them. You know, that's one of the sides of politics that just seems dirty to me. You always hear these candidates come out and try to define their opponent, and they usually try to make them sound not so great. I don't want to try to define my opponents. I think we have four good candidates. I think each of us should speak for ourselves. You know, I know that Chris does a lot of great work. Christopher Pash does a lot of great work with kids with the Dreams, Hope, and Faith Foundation. He takes at-risk kids and gets them into horse competition and working on the ranch. I know that Jerry Lynn Thompson is a consular on the tribal Talawa Dini Nation Tribal Council. And I know that she comes from a family that's lived in this area for probably many, many generations, maybe thousands of years. I'm not really sure, but I think they've certainly owned that ranch since the 1800s. Andre poured his heart out for this community during the Chetco Bar Fire. So those are some of the positive things I would say about my opponents, but I don't want to go into anything else.
Well, thank you, Dan Barbas, for coming in and letting us have an interview with you.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's just so great to see you guys so committed and engaged, involved.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You've just listened to an episode of Bruin Radio Interviews, an hour-long interview show brought to you by the students and staff of the Brookings Harbor High School in partnership with Curry Coast Community Radio, KCIW. Content for this program is provided by the Brookings Harbor High School. To view the credits for this episode, visit kciw.org/credits.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.
You're listening to KCIW LP in beautiful Brookings, Oregon, 100.7 FM. Radio of, by, and for the community.